Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Welcome, listeners. We're happy to be here on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz today. I hope everybody's having a great start to their day. I have a really awesome guest with me today, Dr. Christina Vaughn. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Jill.
I'm glad you're here.
Me too. Thanks so much.
She's with the University of Colorado Hospital, and you're with the Movements Disorder Clinic, right?
And the Neuropalliative Care Clinic also.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Thank you for including that. Tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, again, thanks so much for having me.
Sure.
I'm a neurologist by training. I previously specialized in movement disorders, so that means I focused on diseases like Parkinson's, essential tremor, Huntington's, even Tourette syndrome. Mm-hmm. But after a few years of practicing, I decided I wanted to do a better job taking care of patients and their families and helping them to cope better with the illnesses that they had and to focus on quality of life. So this prompted me to pursue a fellowship in palliative medicine and hospice care, which I completed just in June at UCSD in San Diego and Scripps. And then I began my post here in Denver at UC Denver August 1st in the new division of supportive and neuropalliative care, led up by my colleague, Dr. Benzie Kluger, who I think you had on the show recently.
Yes, well, welcome to Colorado.
Thank you so much.
Glad to have you here.
Thanks.
Excellent. And so, you know, this show is about different types of dementia. Mm-hmm. So I never like to just focus on Alzheimer's. Today we're going to talk about a lot of different things, but Parkinson's comes as a surprise to some of my listeners in Caregiver Nation that it is actually a type of dementia. And this weekend, I heard you speaking at a conference that I was at, and you gave a great speech, by the way. I loved it. It was all about resilience, about trying to stay positive and ways that you could exercise and just keep your mind sharp and try not to get too down about these diseases and so forth. You have this in your family.
Yes, actually, that's what prompted me to pursue medicine and go into neurology, seeing my father have Parkinson's and my maternal grandmother also. Oh, it's pretty common, though. About 1 million people in the U.S. have Parkinson's, and that number is expected to go up as the population ages, because that's the biggest risk factor.
Right. And I was amazed how positive that conference was.
Yeah.
That it was really focused on moving proactively towards a great way of living and not struggling with this disease, even though, like Alzheimer's and most of the dementias that are diseases, there is no cure.
Right.
But you can live well with it. And that was just outstanding.
Right. That was the message. I think it was a pretty popular symposium. It targeted people who were newly diagnosed for the first half of the day. And then the second half of the day, we focused on people with more advanced disease. So we really wanted to cater it to the where people were at in the stage of their Parkinson's, and also to focus on their families and caregivers. But you're right. The goal is to try and strategize and figure out how to optimize quality of life and to live well with Parkinson's. And there's a wonderful community locally and nationally of patients and supporters of Parkinson's efforts, and can be really inspiring.
I was completely inspired. In fact, I wrote a blog about it, which I'll have to send to you, about just how inspiring that was. So let's dive into this.
Sure.
You help patients with advanced or end-stage neurologic diseases and through the course of their illness, mm-hmm. of course. But I thought this was interesting. By providing Botox injection for symptoms management. So can you explain that? It's about dystonia, spasticity, the drooling, the migraines they get.
Sure.
How does Botox help, and how did this get encompassed into your care?
Yeah, it's a great question. A lot of people have heard about Botox from the cosmetics world, you know, people getting Botox for, you know, minimizing wrinkles and things like that. But it's used medically to treat some muscular and other conditions. It comes from a neurotoxin, and it's an organism just found in the environment. But used in the medical world, it's very safe and purified. The FDA approved its use back in 1989.
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So it's been around for a while. Initially, it was approved for eye, like a lazy eye, kind of.
Right.
And then over time, they've just found more and more uses for it. So basically, it works like a muscle relaxant.
Okay.
It takes, you know, your nerve tells your muscle to move or to be tight. And so it interrupts the communication between the nerve and the muscle so that the muscle relaxes. And so we use it in neurology clinics to help relax muscles, and it's a very targeted treatment. So where you put it, that's where it goes.
Okay.
And it's nice because it means you don't necessarily have to take a pill that could affect your whole body and cause potential side effects.
Okay.
So it's great in that when it works well. It lasts for approximately 3 months at a time.
Okay.
So patients only need to come in, you know, maybe 4 times a year to get Botox treatments. But in our clinic, we use it for people that have tight muscles due to, for example, dystonia, which is a neurologic condition causing tightness, pulling, or even shaking or tremor in a specific body part.
Okay.
You may have heard of writer's cramp. That's a more common form of dystonia.
Oh, all right. I didn't know that.
We can see that in the setting of diseases in different body parts. We also use it for patients that have maybe too much saliva, and that can be embarrassing or even just be problematic. So we'll inject it into the salivary glands, where it works differently, but it works to stop saliva production. And again, it'll work for up to 3 months. So some patients find that really helpful.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the things that people don't understand, and I'd like to really dive into, and we'll talk about it more in the second section, but what is the difference between palliative care and hospice for people that don't know?
I'm so glad you asked, because that's a common confusion. So basically, put simply, the goal of palliative care is to help people with serious illness to feel better and to support them and their families through the course of their illness, however long or short that is.
Okay.
It prevents or treats symptoms or side effects of disease and treatment. It also focuses on the emotional, social, practical, and spiritual problems that illnesses can kind of bring up, both for the patient and for their family.
Sure.
And so when people feel better in those areas, they have, our hope is that they have an improved quality of life. And so it's really an approach to care that focuses on quality of life, in short, focusing on symptoms, coping, and future planning. Those three things are kind of at the essence of palliative care. And that's usually done by a team approach, so not just a physician by any means. It's a physician, often a nurse, a social worker. In our case, we have a chaplain in our clinic, can have nutritionist. It depends, you know, what the needs are. But the goal would be to have a very group-based approach to taking care of patients and families. Now, hospice is the palliative care approach, focusing again on quality of life, but strictly for people who have 6 months or less to live.
So comfort care.
Yes.
Okay.
And palliative care can be started as soon as whatever the disease is diagnosed. In fact, we really like to advocate that there's a palliative care support. It's an extra layer of support that's started earlier in a disease.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So hospice is important, and I think people sometimes think that hospice is just about the patient, but the truth of the matter is that hospice is a lot about helping the family through the end of their loved one's life, right?
Absolutely. Just like palliative care is, it's again a focusing on the patient and the patient in the context of their life, including their family and whoever's close to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. So hospice is... it begins after treatment has ended. So in the case of cancers, if they're trying to provide curative treatment and then they're no longer able to do that, then sometimes that's a time when people go into hospice.
Okay.
But in dementias, it's not necessarily as straightforward because sometimes it's hard to prognosticate and assess how long do we think this person has to live.
Right. Okay. Let's pick this up after we hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll talk a little bit more about hospice and palliative care and what the difference is.
Great.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you'll ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Bellevue Heights believes that supporting families and caregivers is just as important as caring for our residents. We offer free monthly support groups, education and lecture series, and presentations by experts in Alzheimer's and dementia care. All of our programs are free and open to the public. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. And ask about our current and upcoming education opportunities and support groups. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Christina Vaughn, and she is from the University of Colorado Hospital, and she works in the neurology clinic with movement and disorders of that nature. So a lot of different types of diseases fall under this. At our break, Christina, we were talking about hospice, and people don't understand hospice. I had this problem with my mom. My sisters thought that hospice coming in meant in her nursing home, that they were going to take over the care. That's not what it means at all. They're just helping to supplement the care. But in your office, with your patients, what is hospice really all about, and who's eligible for it?
So we work with hospice. We specifically aren't providing hospice care, but we work closely with hospice. It's a wonderful service that provides an extra layer of support. And really, the focus is, again, on quality of life. And for however long the patient has left with their disease and with their loved ones, we want to optimize that time. And that's what hospice is all about.
Okay.
And so it's that extra layer of support provided by, again, a team of healthcare providers, usually led by a nurse, but there's a physician involved always. And there's often some volunteers that can help and social worker. And aides that can help depending on the level of care that's needed.
Okay.
So really they assess the patient frequently throughout the week to see what do they need and how can we make things better.
And not only that, but how can the family adjust so that they're not so downtrodden? It's difficult to lose somebody that you love, but it doesn't have to be a bad experience.
Right.
It can be a beautiful experience.
Right.
And you can make sure that that person gets what they need. But we also, as the caregiver and the family, need to understand the dying process and the grieving process and make it something beautiful, not something tragic.
Absolutely. I think you nailed it. It's part of it's education. So hospice comes in and educates the family and the patient about what to expect, because we don't want anyone to be surprised if we can help it. And also, we want to support them. So if the family's having a particularly hard time, we'll bring in the chaplain. Often there's a chaplain or a spiritual care advisor as part of the team, and that can be very helpful for dealing with coping. But a lot of people mistakenly think that when patients go into hospice, we're giving up. And it's so opposite of what it really is. It's aggressive management of the symptoms, you know, whatever we can do to make the patient more comfortable, and caring. You know, it's, we like to say it's not high tech, but it's high touch.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So when does a family make a decision about this? When is the person eligible?
Good question. So if a patient has a condition or a disease where curative measures are no longer an option, and that wouldn't be so relevant in dementia or neurologic disease, but in some other cases like oncology, cancer, then a hospice might be brought up at that time. If the doctor thinks that the patient has 6 months or less to live, that's certainly a time where they'd bring it up. We like to have it discussed earlier in the course, just so patients and families know what options are down the road potentially, so that, you know, if, God forbid, something sudden happened or changed and hospice was really appropriate all of the sudden, we wouldn't want anyone to be taken by surprise. So we're in favor, in our clinic at least, of gently bringing up hospice earlier than later, just to introduce it, because some people don't really get what it is.
Who makes the decision?
Well, ultimately, the patient should make the decision. It's up to the patient. But they have to be considered having 6 months or less if their disease runs its normal course. The family certainly weighs in, but ultimately the decision should rely with the patient.
Okay. And in the dementia world, sometimes that's a little bit hard.
True.
You know, it's funny to me because, especially with Alzheimer's, hippocampal sclerosis, frontal temporal, maybe even Parkinson's, we don't expect the person to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's just not part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have seen people, even with those types of dementia, get off of hospice.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a little confusing too. Can you explain that a little bit? How can somebody recover off of
hospice?
That's a great
question. So I've seen this a lot, and it's very gratifying to watch. A lot of times people, when they join hospice, are so supported by all of the services and the care that comes with it that they do better. It's almost like they're buoyed up for a period.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's good.
And
yeah.
So sometimes they just do better. And if they've reached a point where they're sort of plateaued and maybe even a little better for a period of time, they may not qualify any longer for hospice, in which case hospice backs off and says, we're not abandoning you. We can come back if and when you need us another time. So we like to say sometimes people graduate from hospice.
That's kind of funny, but it's important.
Yeah, it sure
is. It's really important. So how about people who were at home?
Mm-hmm.
What is the home-based hospice all about?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So I'd like to just clarify that hospice, some people think hospice means it's a place where you go. But actually, most often, hospice comes to you wherever you are. So often, that's at home.
Okay.
And so what that means is the hospice team will come in and manage symptoms. And also they can assist the patient and the family with emotional and psychosocial, spiritual aspects of dying.
Let's talk about that for
a
minute. When a person is in the dying stages and maybe they're not eating as much, families are still trying to push food on them or don't understand when they get a little dehydrated, don't understand the dying process at all when the person may be aspirating on food or those big decisions about end of life, extra help, feeding tubes and things, which are not generally thought of as a best practice with somebody that has late stage dementia.
You're right.
But families need help with that.
You're right. And it's difficult. Again, one of the goals is to help educate families about what to expect. And so it's so natural for people, humans, families, to want to feed their loved ones and assume that that's necessary. But as people approach end of life, they often require less and less as far as nutrition. And even though someone may be demented and perhaps not able to speak for themselves, we are able to assess them and figure out if they're comfortable by looking for physical signs on their body.
Right.
And using that and that sort of expertise, we can come to an idea of whether or not they're comfortable, even if they're not able to tell us.
That is so important. Nonverbal communication is absolutely huge. And I think oftentimes a real struggle for people.
Yes.
And they just really don't understand how that works. So I think I've seen a lot of times where home care companies come in and they will work with hospice. They will give signs and information to people when things are sort of falling apart. That's always a good thing. It's good to have the hospice number on the refrigerator so that we can find that and when we need it and just make sure that we have that extra help, not only for the family, but for anybody coming in for home care and anything else like that.
Right.
Well, on one of my earlier shows, we did talk about the MOST form, DNRs and things like that. When we come back from our break, I'm going to ask you about how your neuropalliative care clinic actually works. And then I want to talk a little bit once more about that MOST form and why it's important.
Sure.
So we'll hear a word from our sponsor and we'll be right back.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, before we went to the break, I have Dr. Christina Vaughn from University of Colorado Hospital with us. And Christina, we were talking about hospice care being supportive for home care. What other things can they provide to hospice coming into a home, like medications?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hospice is a service, too, that provides medical equipment to the patient and family at home or wherever they are.
Okay.
It also provides medications for whatever's needed for symptom management and specific to their disease.
Okay.
And hospice is available 24/7. So while it's not in the house all the time, folks aren't there all the time and providing custodial care, they're just a phone call away,
right?
And can be contacted anytime. So hospice really is an all-encompassing service.
Do they provide beds and
yes,
things like that?
They sure do.
Excellent,
yep.
Because that can be very expensive for families when that happens.
Yep.
So I want you to explain a little bit about how your neuropalliative care clinic at University of Colorado really interfaces, because that's not what you do. You provide the palliative care.
Right.
But not necessarily the hospice.
Right.
Just make that a little bit clearer.
Sure. Sure. Thanks. It's so our clinic is the supportive and neuropalliative care clinic at the university. So we see patients who are in advanced stages of all neurologic disease. And since they're not curable, we follow them along as long as we can. And if a time comes when they're no longer able to come to the clinic and see us physically, and then perhaps we think they're approaching end of life, we'll refer them to hospice if that's what they want to do. And then we'll work closely with the hospice team. And sometimes we like to stay on as their doctor while they're on hospice.
Oh, I bet they appreciate that.
Yeah, and we like it too. It's very gratifying to stay involved. You know, we've established a relationship and we want to see it through for however long or short that is.
Nice. And speaking of the end of this, people don't understand advance directives.
Mm.
They don't.
Mm-hmm.
They think a living will covers whether or not you get a feeding tube or not,
mm-hmm.
Whether or not you get fed when you don't want to be fed.
Mm-hmm.
Families struggle with, this is flu season.
Mm-hmm.
If your loved one's in hospice in a community, for example, a care community, if you don't have that most form,
mm-hmm.
you could be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about the most form and power of attorney for a couple of minutes. Why is it important?
I'm glad you brought that up. I think it's never too soon or too early for anyone, no matter what, how healthy or not healthy they are, to come up with an advance directive. And simply all that is deciding what you want or documenting what you want, your wishes are for end of life or concerning medical treatment at the end of life.
Right.
So just having that known to your family and having it documented makes a lot of sense. words. And it's a form of kindness to your family to let them know what you want.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
They struggle with those decisions if they have to make them.
Absolutely. Right. And it takes the burden off the family, potentially, if you've got all of that taken care of and written down. So in Colorado, we have the MOST form, the M-O-S-T, MOST form, and that stands for Medical Orders for Scope of Treatment. And it's a document. It's just a one-page document that's a doctor's order that helps you keep control over your medical care at the end of your life. And so it tells emergency personnel or paramedics if you want CPR, you know, cardiopulmonary resuscitation.
Right.
Some people decide, you know what, I'm going to let nature take its course at the end of my life. If I die or my heart stops, I'm going to let nature take its course.
Right.
And it's important, and that's what they indicate on their MOST form. They say, you know what, I wouldn't want CPR. There's a few other things you can check off on that MOST form surrounding, like you mentioned, artificial nutrition. Some people call that a feeding tube. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the sorts of things that are worth thinking about and documenting, and that's what the MOST form asks you. And certainly once you've filled it out, it's not set in stone. If you change your mind, you just fill out another one. But important to have all of your healthcare providers and your family members up to date on what your wishes are.
And I can't underscore that enough by something that happened in Colorado recently, where a woman was in late stage Alzheimer's.
Mm.
She did not have the MOST form. And she got sick, and they made some heroic efforts to keep her alive against her husband's will, which made him appear like the bad guy.
Oh.
And it could have been solved if they just would have had this MOST form. It's so important. Listeners, please ask your doctors about it. If you have a terminal disease, if you've got Alzheimer's or some other type of dementia, which is classified as a disease, and get those filled out right away. The DNR doesn't necessarily cover it. Do not resuscitate does not necessarily cover it. And if you get in that situation, you're going to have a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not fun. Well, I want to just also say that I love your clinic. I came in and met with some of your doctors here recently, last week. And the work you're doing out there is amazing.
Thank you.
The way you invite families in and say, let's sit down for 2 hours and let's talk about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And you include the caregiver. You include the entire family and anybody that needs to be in that conversation. I said to Dr. Kluger at that time, I shouldn't be amazed by that. And I wish I didn't have to applaud that effort, but it's not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the dementia world where the doctor just says, well, I'm sorry, you have dementia. Here's some medication. Good luck.
Right.
And we'll see you later.
Right.
So it's very, very heartening to me to know that you're all working with that. And even talking to me about my caregiver classes and what I'm doing and trying to find out more. And do you need to reinvent the wheel, or could you possibly someday use my training, which I'm hopeful for?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I've actually invited Julie Burke, a physician's assistant, to come to one of my classes. My next family class will be on the 20th and 27th of October. Call me at 303-999-1961 if you are interested in taking that class. It's filling up fast, but I will have another one in November. So, folks, please call the University of Colorado Hospital. Dr. Vaughn and her group out there are working together as a team. They truly are, from the researchers right down to even on the memories disorder clinic side with Dr. Potter, who's been on my show before, and Dr. Woodcock on the medical side. And then this group, you've got Dr. Kluger, and you're working with him to try and create something new in the team approach care that we have in the world of dementia. Mm-hmm. You're not forgetting our peeps out there. We love that. So any closing remarks that you'd like to share, or anything you didn't say you wanted to?
I just wanted to thank you for all of your work. I can tell you're very passionate about what you're doing.
Thank you. I am.
And
yeah.
We share that passion. You know, we love what we're doing, and we love taking care of patients. And we're hoping that this can become more standard of care and not such an anomaly or so rare, and to be very common to help patients and their families in this way.
Well, and I'm going to do everything I can in the resilience vein, mm-hmm. and speaking to what you spoke about at the conference, to try to get people with Alzheimer's to be more positive with the care.
Mm-hmm.
I try anyway, but I was completely inspired by that conference for Parkinson's disease. My blog was actually Lessons Learned from Alzheimer's Cousin, Our Parkinson's Friends Teach Us How to Live.
Oh, perfect.
And I loved it. So that was really great. Thank you for being on the show. Love to have you back again sometime. Welcome to Colorado.
Thank you.
And everybody out there in Caregiver Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more, and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.